Welcome to the Van Hack Podcast, the podcast for tech talent that wants to get hired abroad.
Good. Here we are for this amazing session. Hope you are enjoying the content shared today, because we still have two more webinars and I am sure you will learn a lot from them. Imagine you will like to live permanently in Canada. I know many of you, like me, have this dream, right? So first you move to Canada and start a new life here, but what happens after, right? What is the next step after you come here and start a whole new life? We are here to help you to know how is every step, right? So in this session, you will learn the best pathways to become a permanent resident of Canada, the do's and the don'ts in this process. And for this, we have an expert from our team. Today, we have Karan Dani, who is the head of global mobility at Van Hack, an immigration consultant based in Vancouver, specialized in global talent stream, business and permanent residency programs. And we have Sharbani Pinto, who is a regulated Canadian immigration consultant based in Toronto and specialized in temporary and permanent residency applications. Welcome, Karan. Welcome, Sharbani. Thank you for sharing this exciting topic with our community. The stage is all yours.
Thank you, Maria. Hi, everybody. I'm Sharbani Pinto, and Maria already did a great introduction of me. So I'll just once more say I'm an immigration consultant with Van Hack, and we are very happy that so many of you have taken the time to join us to hear about our presentation today. Today, Karan Dani, again, the head of global mobility, and myself will present to you pathways to Canadian permanent residency. We'll talk you through a few points today. So Karan, if you can just move the slide to the agenda, which is the introduction to permanent residency. We'll navigate you through the different pathways and programs. We'll talk about express entry, various or three programs in particular: the Canadian Experience Class, the Federal Skill Worker, Provincial Nomination Program, and we'll also touch on the PR application, as well as recent changes to the PR and Express Entry process, as well as NOC codes. And then finally, we'll discuss some frequently answered questions and give you those answers, as well as take your questions about permanent residency and specifics that you may have. So Karan is here to take you through the first few slides. I give it over to Karan. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Sharbani, for the introduction. As introduced, my name is Karan. I'm the head of global mobility here at Van Hack. I've been with Van Hack for about 3.5 years now. And it's really exciting because this is, I think, our first time that we've actually had the chance to do a presentation specifically on permanent residency. We haven't done this before, and I think I wasn't able to join Van Hack Con last year, but I'm excited to be here with everyone today and going over some of these things. So please put your questions in the chat, because we'd love to get to them. Like, as fun as it is to just kind of go over Canadian immigration as a topic, and we'd love to hear from you and what challenges you're having as well. So don't hesitate. Our moderators will sort of post some of the questions for us at the end, and then we can go over those. Okay, so I think without further ado, because a lot of stuff to cover, let's jump into Canadian permanent residency. So let's start with why PR. So permanent residency is, there's two different types of basically statuses in Canada, right? You can either be a temporary resident or permanent resident. So temporary resident would include things like study permits, work permits, visitor visas. So you're here for a specific stint and then you'd stay. And once your work permit for however long is done, the idea is that you'd go back. So some of you might want to stay a little bit longer. So that's kind of what this is for. This is, you know, what the pathways will look like if you are interested in going for permanent residency. You'll see there's some advantages to permanent residency, including social benefits like healthcare, employment insurance, but also, you know, with housing. In some places, if you wanted to buy a home, for instance, there's extra taxes if you're a temporary resident. So as a permanent residency, with permanent residency, you'd avoid those. And then it also, it is the first step before leading into, or it's the next step before leading into Canadian citizenship as well. And so if that's the goal for you, then, and with Canadian citizenship, you can actually vote. With permanent residency, you can't. So I think there's just a couple things to note there. And then once you have your permanent residency, it doesn't expire. As long as you kind of have to maintain your permanent residency, though, by being in Canada for at least, I think, 730 days over the last 5 years. And then if you aren't maintaining your residency, you just have to stay in Canada for a certain number of time. Then it would sort of change. The other thing I think that it's really important to know is that all what you'll probably find in today's webinar is Canada's PR programs can be kind of competitive, you know, compared to other countries. You know, they're not as tough as some, but they, you know, they're pretty open and understanding. But in 2023, Canada expects to bring in about 465,000 permanent residents. So that's the goal set for next year, which is great. So I think Canada really has been built on a foundation of immigration, and that's seeming to continue at least for the future. So we'll talk about one of the main programs right away, which is Express Entry. So some of you may have heard of that, but it's one of the most popular programs to if you wanted to acquire a permanent residency. So touch on that right now. So this is kind of what Canadian immigration can look like in a strange little graph there. So with permanent residency, one of the pathways is Express Entry. So that's kind of where we'll put most of our focus today. Express Entry, what it is it's an online application, online portal, where you would submit your profile, and then based on certain factors such as your education, your age, your language skills, these types of factors would give you certain points for Express Entry, and then they would enter you into the pool of candidates. So for instance, there was a last draw. So there'll be draws usually every 2 weeks or every month. And the last draw was about 494. So that might just be a number to you, but what that means is anybody above that 494 threshold would be invited to apply for permanent residency. In Express Entry right now, since the last draw happened November 9th, and there were about 4,750 people invited. And currently, I think in the Express Entry pool, there's about 233,000 profiles that sit in Express Entry. Now, one question you might have is, how do you get into Express Entry? What do you need? So you do need to qualify under one of these programs. So you'll see some acronyms there, but and Shravani will touch a little bit more on some of the comparisons between these. But one category is called Federal Skilled Worker Program. Basically, this means that if you have work experience outside of Canada to qualify, you need at least 1 year of work experience outside of Canada. And for the other one there is CEC. So that's Canadian Experience Class. That qualifies you once you've had 1 year of work experience in Canada. There's one there that's Federal Skilled Trades Program. That's specifically for trades. We probably won't touch on that too much, but there's certain occupations that fall under there. And then there's also Provincial Nominee Program. So we'll talk about that a little bit as well today. But basically, if you know you don't have a certain threshold with Express Entry, you're not meeting the points, some of the provinces can also give you a nomination to apply for permanent residency through Express Entry. Okay, and then in order to sometimes increase your points, and so I think this is kind of the really important part, which is if you want to increase your points, there's certain ways to do that, like you know, redoing your language test or things like that. But a lot of people, in order to qualify for Express Entry, they'll want to have some sort of temporary residence before. So either becoming a student or a worker. So if you work in Canada for a bit, and that we kind of covered yesterday in the Global Talent Stream work permit webinar. So hopefully some of you caught that as well. Okay, I will just, I think most of the things I covered that are talked about in this slide here, so I probably don't need to spend too much time, but once you do get invited to Express Entry and to apply for permanent residency, they give you about 60 days to complete your entire permanent residency application submitted in. So we'll talk about a little later about some of what that application looks like, so you can maybe prepare a little bit, so you know that 60 days, you can use it to the best of your ability. Yeah, I think I covered most of this stuff already. So what I'll do now is I'll pass it on to Shravani, and she can go over some of the differences between the Canadian Experience Class and the Federal Skilled Worker Program.
Thank you, Karan. Just one more build on the express entry system, and I think you did a fantastic overview of that. Just to highlight to everyone that it is an application system, so it facilitates the application for the programs CEC, FSW, and PNP. So the programs have specific requirements that you need to meet in order to get into this express entry system. So the system is like a management system that facilitates the application process. Also, a lot of people believe if they get into the system, then they have a PR application, and that's not true. You only have a PR application when you submit an application to IRCC for PR. When you're in the pool, you're just in the pool waiting to get an invitation for an application for PR. So I think it's very important to know that Express Entry is just a facilitating process. It's just a system. It's not a program per se. It's just a management system to get the applications in for the different programs. So the programs that go through Express Entry are Canadian Experience Class. That is a program that targets people that have Canadian work experience. A minimum of 1 year of skilled work experience is required. Has to be in Canada within the last 3 years in the tier categories 0 to 3. We'll talk about that a little bit later as well. Karan will touch on that because those categories used to be alphabets before. So you remember it as 0, A, and B, and now it's category 0, 1, 2, 3. There is no education requirement for Canadian experience, but it is important if you need more points that your education matters for the express entry system. So when that application goes into the express entry system, it gets ranked with points, you get more points for more education. So even though none is required, having education is will help your points as well. And just to go back one step on the experience front as well, the experience that you gain in Canada as a student, so if you here on a study permit, that experience does not count for this 1 year in Canada experience. It has to be on your postgraduate permit, work permit, or, you know, on a temporary resident status as a temporary foreign worker, or on an open work permit accompanying a spouse, for example. The other exclusion is self-employment, as it's stated on the program documents. But Karan shared with me yesterday that there is an exception to that. So if you are self-employed, there is a possibility that that self-employment may be considered as work experience. So I'm talking about self-employment in Canada. So the way around that is to just get a determination from CRA, which is Canada Revenue Agency, to determine whether or not it is truly self-employment, because there is some exclusions based on your ownership of that body or that company by which you are self-employed. So it's your own company or it's joint ownership. So there is some kind of distinction between the percentage of ownership where you could be deemed not self-employed, as well as how you pay roles. So if you pay through the company, pay through a third party. So there is some clarification that you can get from CRA and you may just qualify for 1 year experience there. Then on the language ability side as well, there is a requirement for you to prove your language proficiency either in French or English at CLB 7 for those tier 0 or 1 jobs. And then for tier 2 and 3, correction on the slide, it should be CLB 5. So CEC is fairly considered a fairly easy program to get into, but one must just be mindful of the points. So you meet the minimum requirements, you get into express entry, and then just keep an eye out for your CRS points and what the draws are taking place at, and if you need to bump up your scores to have a stronger profile. On the federal skill worker, typically people that have no experience in Canada would qualify for this. They need 1 year of continuous skilled experience in those categories, again, 0 to 3. So most of you that are attending here are in the tech categories. You're presumably in all of these 0 to 3 categories, so you would qualify in that category. The 1 year full-time experience needs to be provable, so you need to have, it needs to be continuous as well, so it cannot be broken up, and you need payslips, contracts, things to prove that you actually have that. You also need a secondary education as a minimum. Like with CEC, I recommend that if you have more, it's better. You have to get it accredited by educational accreditation body, like WES. Some of you may know about that if it's a foreign education. And then on language, higher language requirements, so CLB7 for everyone, not like on the CEC. And then there is a requirement for you to prove that you have sufficient funds to bring into Canada. And that needs to be proved with bank statements, that funds need to be in your name, or and also has to be unencumbered and available to you to bring to Canada. So family of one actually means single status. So if you're one person on your own coming to Canada, that's you, family of one. So 13,000 Canadian is what you need to be able to prove. And then up to a family of four, 24, 7, 3. So once you meet those minimum requirements for FSW, there's one additional layer that you have to comply with. And that is meeting a minimum point score of 67 under a different ranking system. So not the CRS, not the express entry. So this precedes express entry. So this is still determining your eligibility. And these points you can attribute yourself by using online tools and things, but it talks to your age, education, again, your language proficiency, your experience, some adaptability points, as well as if you have a job offer or not. So you need to meet those work experience, education, language ability, have funds available, and then there's an additional layer of the scoring for FSW. But majority of the out-of-country candidates apply under FSW. There are opportunities to increase your points as well through various means, and we'll talk about that later. So the next program I'd like to talk to you about is PNP, Provincial Nomination Program, also possible through express entry once you meet the minimum requirements. So provinces and territories in Canada have specific programs for immigration because they want to target specific categories of people to their province because there is a short supply of that. So the federal program meets an overall, like all Canada requirement, and provinces look specifically at talent that they're trying to attract to them. So the categories that cover all the provinces are the skilled and semi-skilled categories. So tech, typically in skill categories, then the students, and the students we refer to here are students that studied in that province. So typically there'll be programs that they incentivize people to study in that province, and then there are programs that allow them to get provincial nomination. And then also business owners, which is people that could buy a business or invest in a business and settle in the province. The requirement, again, for all provinces is to have an intent and ability to stay in that province, to be economically active in that province. So they really want you to come and be part of their province to add value and be part of it. So that's part of the requirement, in terms of getting a nomination. So nomination basically means the province wants you to come live and settle there. And these programs facilitate that. Some of the programs, so some on the skilled and semi-skilled programs, even the students would need a job offer, not all of them. You may require LMIA, for those who don't know, labor market impact assessment. And that is an employer getting a permission from the province or the federal government that's from the federal government, not the province, for permission to hire the foreign worker. These programs are very, very diverse. So they're different for each program, each province. So Karan and I won't go into every single province and what is required. So we're just trying to give you an overview. It requires specific education, skills, training. In most instances, the requirements are lower than what's required of federal skilled worker. And there's also a settlement fund requirement in some of the programs. Again, also typically lower than what's required for federal skilled worker. And some programs also ask you to provide an expression of interest. So this is an additional process to their process to ask almost for permission to apply to them for a nomination. And then PNPs can be very overwhelming, and it's just because there's so many provinces, there's so much to do. But just in a nutshell, how you apply for provincial nomination, there's two ways to do it. The one is the non-express entry route, and that is the one at the top of my slide. The second one is an express entry route option. So the first one is basically meeting those PNP requirements. So you don't have to worry about express entry at all here. You just meet one of those program requirements. You apply directly to the program. You get nominated by them. And that nomination allows you to apply for PR. The express entry option as well, unfortunately, though it's faster, it's a faster process. It's quite layered in terms of things to do. So the first thing is you've got to meet the PNP requirements because you're going under a PNP program. The second is that you have to meet either federal skill worker or experience class program requirements. And once you do that, you can create your express entry profile. Once that profile is created, then there's two ways you can go. The one is that if the province, and some of the provinces do this, like Ontario, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, they have interests in the pool of candidates within express entry, they will tip into that pool and then they will give notice of interest, a notification of interest to some candidates. The CRS scores may not be very high, but they may be in the category that that particular province wants people. So they will send you a notification of interest, and then you will have to apply to the province. And then once you apply to the province, you will get a nomination certificate. And with the nomination certificate, you will then get 600 points for PR. That will bump up your CRS scores and you'll be able to apply for PR. The other option is when you are again in the pool and then you apply separately through the province to get nominated. The province nominates you and they update your express entry profile with 600 points because that's what PNP does. And then you'll be able to get into the pool, get drawn when an ITA, the opportunity comes through, you'll get an ITA and you'll be able to apply for PR. So a lot of information. I hope that you're able to grasp some of that. And I'll just hand you over to Karan to continue with the other slides. Thank you.
Thanks, Shravani. Thanks for everyone sending your questions, by the way. We're trying to answer them as well as we kind of go along. The other piece of housekeeping that I think we completely forgot this time was just to let you know that these programs, like, it's always good to get advice on it. Like, this is kind of general advice. So for yourself, you know, when you're actually applying, you kind of want, you know, these are kind of, again, just general information. So you don't want to take everything we're saying, but, you know, hopefully some of it does apply to you and you can kind of move forward with it. Okay, so without further ado, so with PNPs, these are some of the costs that are attributed to most of the provincial programs. If you're applying for permanent residency just through Express Entry and you haven't been nominated by a province, the cost is there. So $1,365 Canadian. For you, and if you have a spouse, then $1,365 for them as well. And then any dependent children are about $230. Dependent children can be up to, you can include children up to, I think, 21 years of age, 22 years of age now, I think. Then we have some of the provincial programs. So you can see the cost there. I won't go over them in a lot of detail. But one thing to note is that there are some PNP programs that are specifically just for tech. So I think that some people were asking that in the chat as well. So BC has one that's really fast track. They're all different too. So if you're interested in one of the provinces, I'd suggest even just looking at some of the websites. They're pretty easy to navigate, but BC has one of the provincial programs. And like I said, it's fast track, which is great. Alberta has one as well that they launched recently. That's awesome. It doesn't require much work experience either. Saskatchewan has one that they launched, I believe it was about 5 or 6 months ago, that does require some work experience, about 6 months. And then Ontario, they do it a little differently. So once you have a express entry profile, which, by the way, this is kind of coming up, you can create an express entry profile anytime. The only things you really need to do so are a language test. So you do need a language exam and you do need your education assessed. So you can always create a profile and just sit in the thing. Even if you're not in Canada, that's perfectly okay. So why I'm telling you this as well is sometimes the province of Ontario, they will invite people that they like the profile of. So if you are, you know, if there are professions in Ontario that they're trying to fill and they want more tech workers, they'll invite people directly in. most of these tech programs have only come up in the last year. BC's been doing it for a little while now, but what we're seeing is Canada does want tech professionals, and so things are moving in that direction. I think that's great for our community, and hopefully we'll see you all in Canada soon. Okay, there are some conditions on provincial nominees as well, so I think that's important to be aware of. If you, for instance, get nominated in BC to apply for nomination, you come and get your permanent residency, the expectation then is that you would also intend on residing in BC and that you'd stay in BC even after you become a permanent resident, at least for a couple of years. So that's one thing that's a condition. And then also, if an employer is supporting you through that PNP program, which most of them will require the support of an employer, if you lose that employment or if you decide to leave, it means that it could potentially, your nomination that you have from the province could also be pulled. So, the nice thing about Express Entry is you're not tied to an employer usually with Express Entry. But with PNPs, most of them will need sponsorship from an employer. Most employers, when you ask them, they're hopefully pretty receptive, but just something to know, I think, going into it. Okay, let's go to the next slide. I forget what it is, but I think it is on the applications. Yes, okay. So let's talk about a little bit more about the PR application. This isn't something we've talked about in the past, so I'm kind of excited to talk about it. But what does the actual application look like when you're sending it in? So this is, again, specifically if you're applying through Express Entry, whether you've been nominated by a province or not, this is kind of what the application process looks like. So once you have that invitation to apply, they give you 60 days to complete all this. So the two parts to it are, there's one stage where you have to fill out as much information about yourself as needed, and then the second stage, which is to go over the documents and upload those. You won't be able to see the documents you need until you complete the information of your profile 100%. So you need to complete it completely. And then you can kind of look at your documents. So the information that they sort of ask for is information about your family, which is usually pretty easy. They will ask for your address history. Now, they'll want your address history from every place that you've been living since the last 10 years or 18. So if you are, say, 30, then just the last 10 years. If you were 25, then just since you were 18. So they'll want the address history for all that time. So good idea to keep track of it if you haven't already. They'll want your personal history. So what that means is they'll want maybe pretty much everything you were doing in the last 10 years, or again, since you were 18, if that's more applicable. With personal history, they'll want things like if you were unemployed, working, student. So you cannot leave any gaps in your application. So you can't leave a month saying, you need to fill in every part of your last 10 years. Kind of a fun exercise if you look at it, because you get to reminisce a little bit, but it can be also a little tedious. So it's good to sort of have your dates of when you started at each place. I don't write them down often, but if you can, it's good to keep track of your start and end dates of both your employments. Okay, and then your travel history as well. So they'll want to know any travels you've done in that same period of time. So 10 years or last since you were 18. The only other thing I'll add here is for when you're doing your Express Entry profile. Actually, I'll talk about it later. I'll talk about it. Okay. Let's go into the documents, because I think we'll touch on it there. So normally you'll need to have your language test. So you'd want to include those. There's usually no specific spot for you to include your language test, but I still say I like to upload it anyway so that they have a copy of it. You'll also need to upload your education documents. So your WES, which is the education credential that I mentioned earlier that you would need to apply for PR. But the important part there is your diploma. You definitely want to upload your diploma. And if you have your transcripts, your final transcripts, I'd recommend including those as well. Okay, so for the employment records, so for any employment that you've mentioned in your Express Entry profile where you have and you've gotten points for, you'll need to have the employment records. So the reason I say it in this construed way is that if usually for Express Entry, you only need a maximum of 6 years of experience you need to show. Anything over that usually doesn't give you any additional points. So if you put 10 years of work history, you'll need to have employment records for each of those experiences as well. So which is fine to do, but what employment records typically means is you'll want to have your pay stubs for the last maybe 3 or 4 months that you were working there, You'll want to have an employment contract, or job offers, you know, relieving letters. All these things can go into proving your that you had that experience of that company. But one other main thing is it's really good to have a reference letter, basically a verification letter saying, you know, that you were working there from this time to this time, and this was your job title, and these are your job duties, and then on company letterhead. So usually something like that is really important to get from a company if you can, and then uploading it to your employment records section. Okay, and then you'll also need a job offer. You know, one thing we talked about, I think somebody asked a question about the fund requirement for Canada. So you're actually not required to show funds if you're, as Shravani mentioned earlier, if you're applying through the Canadian Experience class. And also if you have a job offer in Canada. So if you are on a work permit in Canada or tied to an LMIA or anything like that, typically you are exempt from proving funds. So in case those funds kind of scared anyone away, you know, if you do have a job offer in Canada, you don't need it. But if you're applying for and you're applying through Express Entry from outside of Canada and you don't have a job offer with the company, but you get invited, you will need to show those funds that Shravani mentioned earlier. Okay, passport, I'll sort of skip over. That's pretty straightforward. Police certificates, though, you will need police clearances for every country that you stayed in over 6 months in the last 10 years. That's fairly straightforward. There are some little tricky parts to it. For instance, if you are in your home country and then you apply for your police clearance and then you come to Canada afterwards, you know, it could be that that police clearance actually won't be accepted because it needs to be valid. It needs to be taken after you left the country, not when you were there. So there are some little nuances like that. You don't typically need to include police certificates for any time you spent in Canada, but they could request it. I don't see it requested too often anymore, but it was definitely happening 2 or 3 years ago where they want a Canadian police clearance as well. Okay, medical exams. You can use, so you'll need medical exams for some countries for your work permit as well. If you do have those for your work permit, you can typically still use them for your permanent residency as long as they are within the last year, they're still valid. So we mentioned proof of funds already, and then digital photos, pretty straightforward. You can look online for the exact specifications. And then if you did get approved if you get nominated by one of the provinces, I suggest uploading the confirmation of your permanent residency. Again, sometimes they don't ask for it, but it's an important document to include. Okay. These are some of the recent changes to the Express Entry. So if any of you have an Express Entry profile already, please go in and view your application when you log in, because some of you may have received an email, but if you haven't, just 3 days ago, all the NOC codes were updated. So you'll need to go in and update the NOC codes. These are most of the ones for tech occupations. And what they've done is they've added a few more NOC codes to better explain your experience. It's listed by job title, but the NOC code should coincide better with your job duties, not your job title necessarily. So when you look up the NOC codes, just look at the duties and see if that's the job offer you're applying under. So I'll leave that there for anyone to screenshot if they need it, just for a moment. But log in, update your Express Entry, your NOC codes. Great. There are some other changes that I think Shravani talked about. I'll kind of run through them quickly because I do want to give you some time to ask your questions as well. But they have moved to the new tier system. For Express Entry. So the tier stands for training, education, experience, and responsibilities. I don't like to speculate, but there is some speculation that going into 2023, there might be some changes to Express Entry. So right now it's points-based for anyone above a certain amount of score, right? They might start doing invitations that are more based on the type of work that we have, you know, the need for in Canada. So if we need tech individuals, they'll do tech-specific jobs, that type of thing. It hasn't come in yet. These changes are just happening, but we'll see in the new year. But just stay tuned for any of that. So that's why I say if you do want to get ready for the Express Entry profile, highly recommend at least start by doing your language test and your education assessment. The language test lasts for 2 years. So if you plan on, you know, putting your profile in for the next 2 years, you never know. And then also it's 5 years for the education credential. So I'd highly recommend doing both of those. Another change was that paper-based applications can be submitted online now, which is great. Those usually are done through the PNP programs. They take a lot longer for you to get your permanent residency, but at least you can apply for them online now, as opposed to having to send snail mail. Okay, and finally, with BCPNP, they also have moved to the tier system already. They've made those changes. They're allocating points a little differently. If you're curious about it, you can check on their website. I won't go most of the details, but there used to be points specifically for your NOC level, so those tier levels, and there are no more points for that. So those points have been redistributed now. So anyways, they've changed the way that BCPNP now does points, and most of the provinces have adopted the new tier system as well. So stay tuned for that. If anyone's curious, there are some other pathways. We won't talk about this extensively as well, but there are things like family sponsorships. So if you're a permanent resident or a Canadian citizen, you can sponsor parents. And you can't sponsor siblings, but you can also sponsor a spouse or a common law partner. Another PR pathway is the startup visa that was introduced. So with this one, it's for anyone who is, you know, starting a new company maybe, and you have created a new idea. Canada wants innovative businesses to enter Canada. So they've offered PR to these types of individuals. And you typically need to get some sort of organization to back you, but look into it if you have some questions. And then I think some people were asking about Quebec PR. So neither myself or Shravani are licensed in Quebec, but they have their own Quebec programs. Because we're not licensed there, I don't want to share too much information regarding Quebec programs, but just know that they are out there and they're different than the one that we spoke about today. All right, we can go into some frequently asked questions. Maybe I'll leave it to Shravani to start, just because most of you might be tired of hearing my voice. And she's a lot more poised than I am, so I'll leave it to Shravani to speak.
Thanks, Karan. I don't know about that, but anyhow. First question, can I apply for PR as soon as I get my LMIA under the Global Talent Stream? I saw a couple of questions in the chat about this as well. Yes, you can. That will also just immediately give you 50 points to your CRS score. So that will give you the opportunity to get a higher score. I think the one question I got was, can I use it when I arrive in Canada? And yes, you still can do that. You will get those 50 points for a legitimate job offer with the LMIA. I'll take the next one as well, Karan. The question is, I just received PR and have not arrived in Canada yet. Can I apply for a super visa for my parents before I arrive in Canada? So the answer to this is you cannot apply for a super visa, unfortunately. I think the intention behind this question was the individual wanted to come over to Canada with his parents as well. But your PR status is only activated once you land in Canada. So for this answer, it's, you can only apply once you arrive in Canada and get your PR status activated, because the super visa requirement, the minimum requirement is that you only a Canadian or PR can apply for this visa for their parents to get access to it. The third question, can I reuse my medical exam for the work permit? Of course you can. So a medical exam is valid. Karan, I may have to ask for your input here. Is it for 2 years?
1 year is usually the medical exam. I think we just touched on this anyways.
Okay, sorry. So it's 1 year. Okay. I think 2 years is your IELTS and 5 years for your ESA, for your WES, right? So 1 year for medical exam. Sorry, I may have missed that. I was trying to answer some questions on the chat if you did touch on that. My points are too low for express entry. What are my options? So multiple options. You could improve your English if there's opportunity to do so. You could increase your education, though that takes a long time. If you're married and your spouse isn't part of your profile, you could add your spouse on, get additional points for his or her English proficiency as well as education. If you get a job offer, that would be great. Then you can get a legitimate one with an LMIA, you can get 50 points. So if you're struggling, the other option would be the provincial nomination program. But again, follow the process and then you'll get those 600 points for the Express Entry profile. However, one thing I wanted to say about this is, like Karan mentioned, Ontario is very generous. So if you are able to create your profile, create it, and you never know, maybe you're in an occupational category where Ontario is interested in you. And if they are, and you get a nomination certificate from them, 600 points in your account, and then you can get invited and apply. Want to take a few questions, Karan?
Sure, I can take a couple. I think we've answered some of these as well, actually. So how long does a PR application take? I think that's an interesting one right now. So they are really backlogged. So Canada has committed to hiring, I forget the exact numbers, but a ton of people over the next, this fall and winter coming up. So hopefully it starts speeding up, but it used to be about, 6 to 10 months. 6 months is usually the service standard, but right now, if you look online, it says 14 months. They've just started pre-applications recently, restarted. So we'll have to sort of monitor it a little bit, but yeah, they are taking a little more time. Once you have applied for PR, the nice thing is if you're in Canada, you can also apply for what's called a bridging open work permit. So you can, if your work permit's expiring, you can continue to work on that as well. So look into that if you have questions. And then the self-employment count, I think Shivani covered this. So we won't go over it again, but for BCPNP, should I apply for a work permit as well as PR? Yes, highly recommended. I think sometimes it's actually required that you do. So once if BCPNP nominates you and you're outside of Canada, submit your work permit application and then your PR application. It's definitely a good idea to do both. Okay, we have a few minutes left, so maybe we can go over some of the questions from you all, if there are any. Great. All right, Shivani, what benefits do permanent residents get? We kind of touched on this a little bit before, I think, as well, but mostly, yeah, it's just that, you have certain advantages to, you can stay in Canada longer, you don't have to worry about your status. There are in some cities and you don't have to have extra taxes put on you for things like getting houses. Shivani, is there anything else that I'm missing though? I can think of. Shivani's offline. Okay, no problem. But yeah, there basically you don't have to, you're here on a more permanent basis, which is I think the main thing if your family and stuff want to stay here. So healthcare and stuff can still offer to those who are on work permits. So does Alberta have the fastest PR program? Good question. It's tough to say if it's the fastest. They have a really good tech program that they just started in Alberta. The funny part is that once you apply, it's really up to the federal government at the end of the day to actually issue your PR. I've seen some PR applications be approved in 2 months and others take 2 years. So Alberta is pretty quick with their part of it, offering the nomination, but is it the fastest? Maybe we can start a competition amongst the provinces for this. That would be helpful for all of us. Okay, maybe we can see the next question. How long can I stay out of Canada if I'm a permanent resident? So they don't count the time you have outside of Canada, but it's inside of Canada that they want to know. So you need to spend at least 730 days in a five-year rolling period. So at any time, you always need to maintain at least 730 days in Canada, which is 2 years. So in a five-year period, if you spend a couple of years outside, that's not a problem, but you don't want to push it too close. After receiving a valid job offer through VanHack, does one need to fulfill IELTS requirements too, considering the fact that he cleared an English verification test of VanHack? Great question. So we usually apply through the Global Talent Stream, and a language test is actually not needed for the work permit application. It's only needed for the PR application. I see a lot of claps. Yes, nobody needs to do the language test for the work permit, but for the PR, it is needed for if you're going through express entry. More claps, great. Okay, let's see the next question. Maybe Shivani, you want to take it?
Okay. Apologies. I don't know what happened. I just got knocked off there. But I'm back. Does the express entry profile expires after some time? Yes, it does. So it's only valid for a year, but you can recreate a profile. So there is no limitation on that.
And there's no cost either.
Yeah. So when using payslips as proof of employment, how far back do you have to go? How do you get proof for previous employers when you no longer have access to payroll? So in terms of payslips for proof of employment, for each employer that you're providing information about to prove your work experience, you're going to have to supply about 3 to 4 payslips for that employer. But if you're not able to contact those employers, you can always mention that. you could have an affidavit attested to the fact that you're not able to, reach them. You could also show proof of trying to reach them through emails or show some proof that the company doesn't exist anymore. For P&P, do you have to be inside Canada or can it be done from outside? It can most certainly be done from outside. That's not a requirement for you to be in country to do that.
Great. The last question. Thank you so much, Karan and Sharbani. It's nice to hear that there are many paths to get the dream Canadian permanent residency. And thank you again for joining us and sharing this incredible information with our community. Well, thank you. Now, we are ready for our final session of the day and the conference. It's about to start. So if you want to learn more about the US remote tech jobs, I shouldn't miss it. I will see you there in a minute. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Van Hack Podcast. Make sure to create your account at vanhack.com to access jobs that are hiring from abroad.